You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com. Offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
To the journey.
My name is Charlene Schmidt, and with me, as he is every single week, is
Tristan Riddell.
Today we have a really interesting idea. We are going to talk about what Voyager would look like if it had a sequel or a prequel. So we're going to do the little bookend in between the actual story and decide what would happen after Voyager, when, and so many of us wanted to know what happened after they got home. So I have a feeling that that's going to be something that people are going to be interested in hearing, maybe. But then also a prequel. How would that work? And this was just something you kind of came up with out of the blue, Tristan. So what made you think of this?
Well, you know, I feel like you and I are big Breaking Bad fans.
Yes.
And, you know, like, you and I have talked about it a lot, and you and I both have great respect for the show and for the show makers. And then Better Call Saul started coming out. And I talked about this on the Nerd Party, my other show, not too long ago, about how I'm totally eating crow right now because we're seven episodes in to Better Call Saul. And when it was announced that they were going to do a spinoff, which is, you know, like, we're saying sequel and spinoff, we're using the terms interchangeably.
Yeah.
When they were announcing that, I was just like, no, there's no reason, there's no need for a spinoff of Breaking Bad. It's already fine. Like, it's a great show. It's a near perfect show.
Yeah.
There's
just
no need for
alone.
Anything like this. And then when they announced it was going to be a Saul Goodman show, The Lawyer, I was like, no, that's an even worse decision. I was like, no, not at all. Like, that character's okay on the show, but only on the show. I was like, nope, this is bad. This is not going to work. This is stupid. And then I saw it and I was like, holy crap, this is actually really good. I'm entertained, you know, like I'm really entertained.
Yeah,
and so I'm like, I'm announcing to the TTJ audience like I did to the Nerd Party audience, I'm eating crow. I was totally wrong. And so then I started thinking, you know, like what if Voyager had a spinoff and it was a sequel to the show? But then I started thinking, well, Better Call Saul is a prequel show. It's a prequel spinoff. So what if we had both? Or what if we could do both?
Right.
What would it look like?
Yeah, not to give too much away, but that's kind of how I went about my Voyager prequel in that sense, just because it is working so good on Better Call Saul. And you know what? I got to be honest. I wasn't entirely sure about how Better Call Saul was going to go either, because we like heard in the early rumors that maybe it was going to be a comedy. And I thought, oh, that's going to be really corny, guys. Yeah, please don't mess with this. And I kind of felt the same way you did. Like, just leave it alone with Breaking Bad. It was perfect. Don't screw it off with a stupid spinoff. Like, sort of how The Lone Gunman was on The X-Files. Like, it just didn't work. And I thought, oh, no, they're going to do it again.
Lone Gunman.
You know, I kind of did for a while, but it did fizzle out. It just wasn't meant to be, and I kind of felt initially like that's how it was going to go with Better Call Saul, and I just thought, no, don't ruin it. But, boy, have they nailed this.
You are right. You're absolutely right. I mean, like, with I feel like we've talked about The Lone Gunman before. I feel like we have, but
I don't know if we have. It might
have
been another show or another podcast, maybe. I don't know, man. We do so many podcasts that it's really honestly so hard to tell anymore. It's a jumble.
Well, I'm a huge X-Files fan. Like, I'm a gigantic X-Files fan. Gigantic X-Files fan. And so anything anything X-Files related, I loved. When The Lone Gunman came out, I was super excited and I really liked it. But then I totally agree with you. As we started to go to the end, I was like, oh, okay, all right, this isn't so great. And, there's a long tradition of, like, some of my favorite shows are actually spinoffs of shows that were currently going on. Like, Angel is one of my favorite shows. Xena is one of my favorite shows. And growing up, Lone Gunman was really awesome to me, but I was also a child. And and so I'm blanking on some other ones, but those are like two main shows that have really impacted my genre TV watching. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think, is there any other shows that were spinoffs that happened after the show ended? And I know that like Star Trek is like all of our Star Trek iterations are technically spinoffs, but...
Oh, are you talking just TV in general? Because the first thing that comes TV to my mind is Frasier.
Oh, yeah. Did Frasier start when Cheers was going on, or...
You know, to be honest, I don't remember. I watched Frasier, but I didn't watch that much Cheers, believe it or not.
Yeah. No, same here. I didn't watch that much Cheers at all, but I love Frasier.
Somebody write us in and tell us the timeline of Cheers/Frasier, because I'm not sure. I want to say that it happened not long after Cheers, but I could be totally wrong. So if I'm talking out of my rear end, just please let me know and set the record straight, because I really just don't know. I'll stop talking now. You know, what's kind of interesting is a lot of times I feel like movie sequels really fall short of the original, whereas TV spinoffs don't do so bad most of the time.
Even just the spinoffs that I was talking about and the one that you mentioned, I mean, Frasier went on for 10 years.
It was a long time, and it was a great show.
It was a fantastic show, got a lot of accolades, got an even larger audience than Cheers, I think. And then you look at Hercules and Xena. Xena has made much more of an impression on our culture than Hercules did, because like Xena, like Hercules was a good show and Kevin Sorbo, you know, did a great job, mm-hmm. but Xena and Lucy Lawless is iconic.
Yeah.
And then with Angel and Buffy, a lot of credit to Lucy Lawless. And with Angel and Buffy, I can't really say that Angel surpassed Buffy, but I feel like it did as good as Buffy.
It measured up, yeah.
Yeah, it measured up. And so, and then, like you said with Frasier, I mean, all these spinoffs that we're giving, I'm sure that there's many, many examples of spinoffs that didn't work, Joey
tons.
From Friends, but...
yeah.
But, I mean, honestly, I think these, especially in genre, it's pretty solid.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's steer this back to Star Trek now and talk about Voyager. I kind of want to talk more about a sequel first, just because I feel like a sequel is going to be a little more straightforward. Because it's, okay. I feel like it's going to take place not long after Voyager comes home, and it's in a universe that we're already familiar in. So does that make sense?
Yeah.
I kind of feel like, in a way, if they even wanted to adapt the novel verse into a live-action TV series, they could do that. And in Voyager's case, this would be really interesting because of all that they're doing in the Delta Quadrant again. So it's so crazy, right? They get home, finally. There's the debriefing and all that. But then they're going to go back to the Delta Quadrant when they just got back. Are you crazy? But then there's so many adventures.
Now, Char, not everybody has read the novelverse. Not everybody knows what you're talking about. Not everybody.
Sorry, spoiler alert.
So, like, they may not know all of these iterations. But okay, so do you want to go first with your sequel?
Well, this is kind of okay. Sure, yeah. This is
like,
kind
how about
of...
you pitch us your sequel? Say like I'm a studio exec, and you're just like, you know what? This is what we need.
I'm already kind of on that track where I'm wanting to pitch. Essentially, let's just continue on the timeline that we're already on. It's maybe like several months, maybe a year after Voyager's gotten home. And where is everybody now? What's going on with Voyager? And it's, I think, very much what the novels are doing right now. I think that there's definitely potential for live action TV there. And so for those of you who are not well versed in the novels, of course, everybody did get home and Voyager got refit. Chakotay is now in command of Voyager because Janeway got promoted to Admiral, as you might remember from Nemesis. And Tom is the first officer, and Tuvok is back on Vulcan. And so there's a little bit of change, but by and large, you've got a lot of the same stuff. So if you just want more of the same good stuff, this is an opportunity. And I think a lot of us really are kind of clamoring more for that good old Star Trek that we grew up with because of the Abrams verse. Like, we want our Star Trek, you know, like the angry old man, get off my lawn, JJ. I want my Star Trek back. Well, this would be a good way to do it. Plus, the way they get to the Delta Quadrant is through the slipstream drive. They've managed to perfect that technology, but it is still very shaky. And so there's always that risk that they could get stranded again. And yet, they go back there. And they are trying to make alliances. They are trying to make peace. They are trying to spread the good word of the Federation, I guess. And it's been very difficult at best. And so there's a lot of potential there for storylines, long arcs, good arcs. And then, of course, there's this whole thing. Should I give us away, Tristan, about what happens to Janeway?
You've hinted at this a couple of times in the past couple of weeks. And so I think it's no mystery as to what has happened. And for the people who don't want anything skipped, hit the 30-second mark or 2-minute mark on your podcast and skip ahead.
Yeah, all right. I'll keep this concise. Essentially, what happens in the novels, Janeway dies, sacrifices herself to save the Federation from yet another Borg invasion. Chakotay's totally heartbroken. He grieves. But Janeway doesn't really die. She goes to the Q Continuum and is resurrected. Read the novel. Oh God, what is it? Is it Eternal Tide?
I have no clue. I haven't read it. I don't know.
Oh my gosh, it's been a while and my memory is blanking. But anyway, she comes back and she is alive once again. And she is commanding this fleet that is in the Delta Quadrant now. Baba boom. I want to see that on screen.
Okay, so your idea isn't so much of a spinoff show, but just Voyager Season 8 based off of the novels.
It kind of is. Yeah, I want to see a lot of the same familiar characters, but I do want to see a mixture of some new people just because some of the people that we do know and love are no longer on the ship. That's going to give it a breath of fresh air, I think. It's going to change the dynamic. It's going to make things more complicated. And it's not going to be a complete repeat of what we've already seen. So a little bit of old and new. What do you think about that?
I think with that, I mean,
I don't know. Is it too straightforward?
I feel like, and I don't want to be too critical, but
oh,
I
be
feel
critical.
Like,
come on.
In order to do something new, in order to justify a new series, like let's transport back to 2001, May of 2001. You know, Voyager is over. And people are like, oh my God, what are we going to do? Well, at least we still have Enterprise. But then somehow there's an announcement where they're like, you know what? We're going to do a spinoff. We're going to do a sequel show. Like, it's going to be Enterprise is on the air as well as some of the Voyager crew that you know and love. And so here's the thing is that if you came and pitched this idea, I feel like people would say, no, we need to do something fresh. We need to do something different. And as much as I want your idea to happen, because I love your idea, I feel like if you went to the exec, like say Brandon Braga and all them said like, okay, we have an idea for a show, and then they pitch everything that you just pitched, the execs at UPN or Paramount or CBS or whatever, they would be like, we told you your show is canceled. Like you're not getting
you
a season
that, right?
8. Yeah, like
no,
you realize
no,
that,
okay.
Right? Yeah.
All right. Now, in 2001, absolutely this would not work because of the fatigue and just the sheer shakiness of Enterprise in and of itself. That was enough. No, I'm talking, let's pitch this in 2015 where there's been some space and we're ready to return to the 24th century now.
Okay. Well, let's take it from that perspective then. Okay, let's take your idea from that perspective. I like that. So let's do, I think what you're pitching then is a reunion show, okay? It's something that...
You're right. Yes, it is.
Like, what you're pitching is, like, what 24 did and what X-Files might be doing.
Yeah, oh, and I'm so excited about that, by the way. Yes, you're not the only X-Files geek. I want that to happen so much.
Yeah, X-Files, for those of you who don't know, David Duchovny, Gillian Anderson, and Chris Carter are in talks to come back with a limited event series. So it'd just be a handful of episodes. It probably even wouldn't be a full season like 24 was, even though that was a half-order season. And so here's the thing is that I think with your idea, I think it would be grand to do a limited release like a made-for-TV movie or
sure.
a miniseries where it's like
yeah,
six
yeah.
episodes or something like that. I
mm-hmm.
think that would be perfect for what you're describing because...
Yes, it doesn't need to be ongoing. It doesn't need to run for another 7 years. No, I just kind of want, I guess, the epilogue.
Yeah.
You
yes,
know, what was
yes.
missing from Endgame?
And you could even do the stuff in the novels, but the thing is you would have to do it not like a month after they get home. It would have to be the amount of time that went by.
Like, that's true, because they've
it would
all
have
aged.
To be 14 years. Yeah, it was like 14 years went by. Where are they now? And so Chakotay is is like has been his is the captain for a long like he's the captain maybe on a new ship, or they have to do this whole story where they have to get Voyager out of mothballs, you know, stuff like that. Okay, so are you changing your idea then?
But we've done the Voyager reunion show, so actually, if you want to go back and listen to that, that has all my ideas of what would be happening in the distant future, you know, another, like, say 10 years, what all the characters would be doing. But then you could tie it back in, I suppose, and they could all, maybe for whatever reason, get together one last time for another adventure, or maybe Admiral Janeway needs some help over in the Delta Quadrant with the fleet that's over there. I don't know. There's a lot of possibilities there, but I do like the idea of let's keep it in the amount of time that has actually passed so that the actors can look their age.
I think you'd have to tweak your ideas just a little bit just for the passage of time, but you could keep your, like I said, you could keep your ideas, but as long as it was a reunion show, like even though, because what you talked about a little bit ago about like, about how we did a podcast about a reunion show. This isn't it. Like, this is an idea of what we could do for an actual, like, our reunion podcast was not about what we would see in a reunion show.
Oh, no. It was just, what is everybody doing?
I'm and just explaining it to the audience.
And obviously that would come through in this, but it would have to be so much more.
Yeah. And so I think, like, with your idea, tweaked a little bit for the passage of time, I think would be a great collection of episodes for an epilogue. I think you put it right, for an epilogue and a reunion show. And then, I think that's how we could make your idea. I think that's how you could pitch your idea to the network.
Okay, boom. And they better buy it. All right. Well, that's my idea for a sequel. What would you want to do with Voyager? Well, post-Voyager.
It's funny that you mentioned our reunion podcast, because what I did for the sequel, I'm drawing heavily on what we pitched in that reunion.
Ha! Okay.
Because one thing that I was fascinated on, like one segment that we did, and I mean, this is going to be a big shocker to people, but is the relationship between Tom and B'Elanna. And
no way, you.
I know, right?
Never.
Crazy. And I feel like that out of all of the situations that happened, I feel like that is the two characters that I think relate the most at the end. I mean, like at the very end of the episode, his and hers child is born. He leaves the console to go see his new baby, even though this was the journey he was looking forward to over the past 7 years that they were all working towards. He was willing to sacrifice that last leg home because what's really important is his family in sickbay. And so I want the spinoff show, and that's what this would really be. This would be a spinoff show, a pure spinoff, not a reunion, not not an epilogue, not even a sequel show, but a spinoff series, because it would focus on Tom and B'Elanna and adjusting their new life together. Now, I know some Star Trek fans are kind of going like, how is that going to work? It's not a sci-fi show. This isn't Dawson's Creek. You know, like this isn't Scandal. You know, like you got to have some sci-fi element in there. What we talked about earlier was their new life together, about like the struggles of raising a child on Earth, about adjusting to their life at Earth. So like the beginning of the show would be that. It would be very different. It'd be a very different Star Trek show. It'd be, we'd see a lot of 24th century Earth, a lot of 24th century San Francisco. And so I feel like we'd give the fans a lot of what they wanted over the years, because I always enjoyed seeing 24th century San Francisco.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And so you would see them adjust and finding new jobs. Where like, does Tom still want to be a pilot? Does B'Elanna still want to be an engineer? Do they even still want to be in Starfleet? Figure out how B'Elanna adjusts to life not being a Maquis. How is she treated on Earth because she used to be a Maquis? You know, does she have any legal troubles that they have to deal with? And that kind of thing. And also like just, you know, dealing with morale and how their relationship changes. And so we deal with those things at first, and then we slowly move into what they do. And what we talked about was Tom and B'Elanna develop ships together. You know, like they design ships together, they build them, and then they test them. And I feel like, what if there's some sort of threat? You know, like what if there is an overarching threat, not the Dominion, not the Borg, something new. And so Tom and B'Elanna are a part of this effort where they have to develop new technologies to equip new ships with this. And so they go out and they test them in the field in real battles or in real situations. And it doesn't have to be like phaser fights every single week, but they like there's this overarching threat that has this where you can still have episodic television, but it still has the arc overall. And you get people who pop in every once in a while. Do you know what would really help this project? Borg nanoprobes. We should call Seven. You know, like stuff like that. But the thing is, like, those would just be guest appearances. Like, they would not be stars of the show. It would just be guest appearances. And and it would just kind of culminate into that. And so that's my what do you think of that idea?
I think that has potential, but let me be critical here. It has the potential also to be possibly boring, because it is too much real life. And then you're going to have the occasional space battle. You're going to I think you're going to have to work out how exactly you're going to balance it and make kind of their journey of self-exploration, like the things that you said about questioning, do I even want to be in Starfleet anymore? Do I want to be doing this? Do I want to be doing that? What about our kid? You're going to have to find a way to put a spin on that and make that interesting, which is definitely possible, for sure. Mm-hmm. It's just figuring out how that would happen. Now, that would definitely be a very different Star Trek series. And for those who want a breath of fresh air, who totally yawned at my idea, they're probably going to love this because it is something different. And I think it would be very grounded in reality, where, of course, you're in the 24th century and there's still a lot of Star Trek in it, but you're really delving into the core of what we do love about Star Trek, which is, of course, exploration of humanity. Mm-hmm. And so it's not a bad idea at all. It is a very different direction, but it could be just the very right thing.
I completely agree with, you know, like if with what you said about how it could potentially be boring for a sci-fi audience, because if it was just that first part that I pitched, yes, absolutely, it'd be boring. It wouldn't be a Star Trek show. It'd just be a drama set with some extra technology. But I feel like if there was a threat to it, where there was a goal to the episode, where it's just like, okay, well, you know, we're on Earth now, and we need to protect Earth, and we need to protect Earth from these big baddies. And so I kind of see it as Enterprise season 3, where it has that arc, and so they have this unified front. And Tom and B'Elanna are the only ones that can help in this area, where it's not so much they have to journey through the expanse, but everything that they're doing is reaching towards that goal. And so since it's prolonged and since it's expanded, we can focus on the character moments, and we can focus on the interpersonal relationship issues while still having that, you know, like that moment of the week where the bad guy of the week or the drama of the week where, like, sure, you know, like, oh crap, crap's gonna explode. And so it really is a balance, but I feel like this would be a breath of fresh air because it focuses more on that aspect, and I feel like that is always secondary in Star Trek. But if you look at the Mad Men, the Breaking Bad, and Walking Dead, like what AMC is doing in the past, you know, 5 years, it's much more action is secondary and character development first.
Yes.
And so I think if we flip Star Trek on its head, I think that would be a great way to deliver a spinoff show.
Yeah, no, I agree. That would be a fantastic way of going about it. Plus, I think in regards to Tom and B'Elanna having to maybe be a part of combating the threat, this overall arc, I feel like you could definitely add more drama to where they, like, something happens to where they have no choice. They have to rise up and they've got to confront it, despite the personal expense that they're going to suffer as a result in some way.
Right.
And so that could be very interesting too. And that's kind of what Breaking Bad does too, as well, as, you know, a lot of times the characters are reacting to a situation and they've got to find their way out of it. That's very interesting to watch, because you are then watching them use their ingenuity to find a way out. When you think, oh God, it can't get any worse than this, how are they going to get out of this one? Guess what they do? And so that could definitely work. That could be very interesting. And I would say, of all the Voyager characters to do a spinoff show of, Tom and B'Elanna are it.
I feel like if you just chose one person, it would have to be, like, if it wasn't Tom and B'Elanna, and it was just a spinoff show of one person, kind of like Saul Goodman, or Angel, or whomever, you know, like, if it was just one person instead of a group of people. Although, you know what, you can't really say that, because in Better Call Saul, you have Mike that's becoming
a big part of the show. Right, I was just going to bring that up. It's not just Saul, and it's not even Saul at this point.
Yeah, exactly. And in Angel, you had Cordelia that went along, you know. And yeah. Then in, I feel like Xena was the only thing where it's just her.
Yeah, no, and the ties to people we're already familiar with, I think, just gives us those nice, great fanboy moments, you know. Oh my gosh, they contacted Seven. How is she? What's she doing? Oh my gosh, it's so nice to see her.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like that's, you could bring that in, and then like the big one would, of course, be Janeway, where maybe like I could just see her just like they're in battle, they're testing out new technology, and then Janeway just kind of like swoops in at the last second, kind of like in First Contact, where you know, like the helmsman is like, it's the Enterprise, but it's like, but it's Janeway this time, you know, like it's Janeway.
Yeah, I love
it's
it.
Like I heard you needed some help.
Fire phasers.
Exactly. That's my idea. I mean, I feel like there's some downsides. There's some positives to my idea, but I feel like if you just find the right balance, and but I absolutely love your idea for a miniseries or like a limited, what's the term I'm looking for? Like not limited edition, but limited engagement.
There we go.
Series. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Honestly, that is something I would really love to have out of Star Trek right now. Because we've got
right
so much
now.
Distance between TNG and DS9 and Voyager. Yes, we need a reunion show. Come on. But I also like your idea of, too, of really getting into dramatic character development. I mean, come on. We'd eat that up. So
those are
some good spinoff ideas right there for a sequel. Let's shift gears now and go to more of how maybe a prequel would work. We've brought up Better Call Saul so many times, but I'm going to keep going on this riff because that is exactly kind of how I would feel a really good prequel would work. Is for those of you who haven't seen Better Call Saul, it starts off in the future of Breaking Bad. You know, we've left off on Breaking Bad, and here's what's going on in the future. We see what Saul Goodman has become, and I will try not to give anything away. And then we kind of flash back to he kind of wants to relive his good old days. And then we start getting into the actual story that is pre-Breaking Bad. And we find out what Saul has been doing that led up to the guy we did get to start to know in Breaking Bad. So that, in a nutshell, is the show. So I'm thinking we do a similar thing where we start off in the future. A character is ruined because of Voyager in some way. Crew... maybe it's a Maquis, they've lost all of their family, they are devastated, and all of that. And then we go back to this person's history, and then how does it tie into what they do on Voyager? Now, I'm thinking somebody we don't know very well, but we know their name and their face.
Okay.
So I'm thinking a very secondary character. Maybe, I don't want to say Samantha Wildman, I don't think she can carry a series. I'm not really sure who this is yet. I didn't develop this enough. But I'm thinking it could be somebody we just maybe, you know of from glances, like Lieutenant Ayala, or somebody that we could really flesh out. We don't know much about, but we're familiar enough to where, oh, I remember that name. Maybe it's Lieutenant Carey, even. I don't know. What do you think about that?
What's the basis of the show? Like, what's the mission statement? Like, what are we seeing him, like, how, him or her, are we seeing their life lead up to Voyager? Or are we seeing what struggle are we seeing?
I think we're gonna delve into the Maquis years a little bit. We're gonna go into depth of the Maquis because we sadly did not get that much of it on Voyager.
So it wouldn't be Carey then. Like it would be
Carey if it's Maquis. No. I'm not sure where I'm going with this.
That's okay. Okay. So let's just focus on this then. Okay. So you had an idea of you wanted one character. You wanted one unknown crewman that you wanted to focus on. That's your idea. That's your kernel. You're like, okay, I want.
I suppose.
Like,
yes.
You see, like you're seeing a destroyed man at the end of Voyager. Like at the beginning of the show, like to go off your idea. Let's say we see this one man at the homecoming. Okay, so like everybody's shaking hands, everybody's getting medals, everybody's hugging loved ones, and then, you know, like the crowd parts and we see this individual and he sees someone he knows. We know it's somebody he knows, but we don't know who it is. And then like the man or the person's confused. And so they comes up to him and he's like, oh, I haven't seen you in years. He's like, well, obviously I've been away. He says, he's like, I have some bad news to tell you. And just his whole world is destroyed. And so like, mm-hmm. yes, they've been in contact, you know, since the Pathfinder project, but maybe he's the person who never really got any mail and he didn't understand why. He tried to investigate, but he could never figure it out. Sure. There's some sort of family situation, job situation, personal situation where everything just went to hell.
Yeah, it all fell apart. And so this guy has, for all these years of building up to wanting to come back home to everything that he knew before, it's now gone.
So
could you
how
imagine
about
watching
this?
That?
Taking your idea, how about we have kind of a lost feel, like where it goes back and forth, where we do not see anything during Voyager. We see only stuff before and after. So we're talking about a span of 7 years that we don't touch. And okay. So we see this individual adjust to his life in, you know, like on Earth after the homecoming. And we see what happened to him before he was lost in the Delta Quadrant and what led up to him ultimately being on Voyager. And so, and how there's parallels between the past and the future going back and forth. And so we develop that by either a different, like we can show that in several different ways, you know, like a hairstyle, you know, like, or,
Voyager is very well known for that.
Yeah, exactly. And so like, we just do that, like how Lost did, but we do it better than Lost. And so that way it's just like, and we can get references back and forth. Like in the future, we can see references to Voyager where he talks about the, you know, like he talks about the Krenim and how horrible that was and how that relates to a previous situation that he had before he was on Voyager, how it relates to him now. And so we use the wealth of those 7 years as memories, but we never see them. And so we just kind of go back and forth. Like, what if we change it into something like that?
I totally love it. See, now that this is why I need you to bounce the ideas back and forth. This is why we do what we do and how we do it. Because you'll take that little kernel of a thing that I got there and just transform it into something that's really workable. So thank you. No, I love it. I love it because, it, you know, in the quote-unquote present day, this is a very broken person. And it seems like just when he's on the mend, when things are about to get better, boom, something is going to happen. Tragedy is going to strike. And we're just going to feel so bad for him yet again. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, not to be – I don't want it to be a downer of a show, but – I mean, you kind of have to keep things going somehow, and
it's going to be a hopeful show. It's going to be a hopeful show where he gets better, he finds silver linings, and he goes forward.
Well, here's the thing is, and I mean, you don't want it to be like a very linear, straight shoot graph where it goes from bottom to top. No, that's not how life works. It's got its curves of ups and downs, ups and downs, ups and downs, but the overall trend is upward, so that's why we're going to root for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that could be, I could go with that. Yeah, totally. Now, what would you do with a prequel?
My prequel is a very much, it's very straightforward. It's very, very straightforward. It's pretty much Star Trek Valjean is what it is.
Okay.
Is that we see the history of this ship. You know, we see the history of the Maquis before Voyager. And we would have to do this right away, like right as the show was over, because people age. And just like Saul Goodman, he ages.
Yes.
But Chakotay would be the kind of the protagonist of the show. And I know like a lot of people are probably groaning, but
yeah,
it would
he can't carry a show.
Yeah, I feel like he could given the proper writers and the proper executive producers. And I feel like it's we see Chakotay at the beginning and it's before he's even recruited into the Maquis. It's we see him and I know that like we're going to draw a lot as you drew a lot from the post-homecoming novels, I have to draw a lot from Pathways.
And, yes.
And so we see how he's recruited, how this mysterious woman finds him and tells him, is like, you know, like, I hear, you know, like, you're struggling with this, with this Cardassian Federation conflict just as much as I am. Maybe we can help each other out. And we see him, and he's like, okay, well, now that I have a cause, now I need a ship. Now that I have a ship, I need a crew. And so it's mm-hmm. all about like that first season is him putting everything together and finding everyone, finding B'Elanna, finding the Maquis that are throughout Voyager, just like one by one. And that's where we can get our Mokehi you know, like, and and some other people that we've seen just have guest appearances. Maybe they have a little bit bigger portion of the show. And
yeah,
so, like, at the end of season one, you know, they start their skirmishes. They go through their whole ship and their whole crew. And then, you know, as the show continues, and whether this is limited engagement or whatever, I mean, this is all hypothetical. This is fantasy land, so we can do whatever the hell we want.
That's right.
I like what we do is, like, in the middle of the show, we have Tom Paris come in.
Okay.
And it, like, it's a heavy recruitment process, just so we can have him in a handful of episodes and, like, basically figure him out. And then we have him on his first skirmish and he gets captured and you're like, ah, Tom. And but Tom and B'Elanna totally don't get along. Like, they don't like each other. And,
awesome. Yes.
And it's just kind of a wink to the audience where they just can't stand each other. And because it wasn't really referenced in Voyager, where it's like in Pathways, there was stuff between B'Elanna and Tom in the book. But in Voyager, they didn't discount that they didn't know each other. Like, they didn't address like they didn't have this meeting where they're like, hey, my name's Tom Paris. My name's B'Elanna Torres. They didn't have that. So we can do whatever the hell we want with that relationship.
That's right. Yeah. No, this is an interesting idea because even though we know what's going to happen, it doesn't matter. It's because of what's interesting about this is the how.
Is the how and the missions in between. Yeah.
Yeah. The end result doesn't really matter. We know that and that's fine. It's filling in the blanks in between that's really going to make this really kind of watchable. Now, I have an idea for you on this. You wanted to use the original actors, but what if you didn't? What if you filmed it today in 2015 and you used younger actors to play the same roles?
I feel like that this is the type of show that could do that. I mean, I think it absolutely could do that. I feel like even if this wasn't a show that happened when Voyager was still in the air or right when Voyager went off, I feel like if people wanted to have it happen today, I think you definitely could use the same characters. But at the same time, I feel like if you did something like this, why wouldn't you just do all new characters, you know? Like, I feel like you could go either way where you could say, like, oh, yeah, like, let's do this story, you know? Or I feel like producers would be much more apt to, like, okay, well, if we're going to do a new show, let's do new characters so we're not beholden to a timeline, kind of like why J.J. Abrams wanted to reboot the timeline. But before we get into any more, I need to talk about how I would end the show, the end of the show.
Yes, that is important, because how would this end?
Yeah, the end of the show would be, hey, I found somebody who I think could really help us out, who could really just kind of like push us over the edge and like really whip this crew into shape and just really be a big asset. And Blonde's like, who? They're like, well, let's show him in. And it's Tuvok, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
And then that's the, like, he doesn't have a couple of episodes. It is not Tuvok. Like, it's not like, oh, I'm kind of worried about this Vulcan. Like, no, that is the last moment of the show. The last moment of the series finale is Tuvok walking onto the bridge.
I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm just not envisioning it correctly in my head, but I feel like that's an... I kind of feel like it's an awkward place to leave off.
Well, how would you end it?
I don't know.
Well, no, like, here's the thing. Getting sucked into
the Badlands? I mean,
But I don't feel like we need to see that. I don't feel like we need to see them go into the Badlands, where, like, they just reference the Badlands, or they reference... like, you know, like going into a skirmish or something like that, because once we see that beautiful Vulcan, it is like we all know what's going to happen. Like, we all know we were all waiting for Tuvok, because once Tuvok comes in, that's the end of the show, because that is the beginning of Voyager. You can't have any more show after that.
Yeah. Okay. You know, the more I envision it in my head, I think the more you're probably right here. Where that's just, you see Tuvok's face and then you fade and then the rest is history.
Yeah. That kind of thing. Like, it's kind of like, bam, the rest is history. That kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe. I feel like this could also work as a miniseries.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't see this going for like a 7-year run or even a 5-year run.
Think you could.
Yeah.
No, it would make a fantastic like 5-hour... broken up into 1-hour segments kind of a thing. And I'm starting to wonder if we'll see more things like this on Netflix.
I hope so. I mean, I remember growing up, we had TV movies and miniseries all the time.
All the time, yeah.
And like in the early 90s and even late 80s, they were just all the time. And you still see them today, but they're not as gigantic. They're not as much of a production. I mean, like I'm sure we had the Bible, but that was about it for a long time. And mm-hmm. it was just. I mean, I know. I'm sure that people are going to write letters saying like, well, what about this? What about this? What about this? We did like yes, we've had miniseries and TV movies all throughout history. But there was just seemed like there was just a prime of it in the late 80s and
oh,
early
yeah.
90s. And
yeah,
it's
oh,
now
totally
much
agree.
More sporadic.
It is. It's just, I guess, not as much of a thing anymore. But I want to see them make a comeback because then we could have little stories like this that you can't really stretch out. It's not the premise for a whole series so much as it is just a nice story.
Yeah.
A self-contained story. It's got a very solid beginning. It's got an end. And then, boom, it's done.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that, and that would be fantastic if Netflix got on this train. So if anybody at Netflix is listening, I want you to work on this.
And it doesn't even have to be ideas like this. It can just be miniseries. I mean, like, okay, one of my favorite miniseries of all time is Dune, Frank Herbert's Dune.
Oh yeah,
because
yeah.
there was a movie in the 80s, and some people liked it, a lot of people didn't. And then in 2000, the Sci-Fi Channel made a miniseries based off of the first book. And it was so successful that they made a miniseries off of the next two. And what it was broken up into three parts. And each part was an hour and a half without commercials. It was an hour and a half. And it was genius. It was great. I absolutely loved it. It invigorated me to write stories like this. Like, now, granted, like Dune is my favorite novel, but... Not like it inspired me to write, but like this miniseries specifically, I was just like, man, we should do limited, you know, engagement TV like this more. And I feel like this might start to happen because of X-Files and 24 and everything like that. Like mm-hmm. we'll get the old stories out of our system where it's just like, okay, we'll just rebooting shows that like reuniting or rebooting shows that worked, but then we can move on to original stories or things that we haven't seen before. And I feel like now is the time to do it.
Yeah, totally. And Star Trek is a perfect candidate for this as well.
Absolutely.
Just, you know, jump in for a little while, play in the universe, but it doesn't have to be a big epic thing, and then we don't have to worry about getting canceled.
Right, exactly. That's the thing, is that like people are screaming for a Star Trek show. People are screaming for a new mm-hmm. Star Trek show. How about you just dip your toe in the water? Give us a miniseries. Give
yeah.
us a Netflix
well,
limited
we
engagement.
We could do several, as we've outlined even in this podcast, just little things here and there, little pieces of the Star Trek universe. You could play in so many different areas here. Yeah.
It's low risk, high reward when it comes to a miniseries or limited engagement like that. And so you're like, you don't have to contract for three seasons. You don't have to contract for seven seasons. Let's just do something small and see where it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I think we'd be all over that.
I think so, too.
All right. Well, prequels and sequels aren't the only thing that we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week. And so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
It's not an overstatement, and you had said in your introduction that without him and his hand guiding all of this, then it's unlikely that 2 would have been what it was, and if it had not been successful, then it probably would have meant the end of Star Trek at that point.
Earl Grey.
Like, I'm expecting Ricardo Martaban to, like, walk around the corner and be like, Captain Picard, welcome.
This is Risa 5!
The shuttlecraft.
The orb.
Curzon is involved with the Khitomer Accords. Spock is at Khitomer when those are being talked about, so you would think they would have run into each other.
They probably hung out in the bar together.
To the journey!
One guy's like, why don't we just write better stories for Wesley? And then the lead writer's like, you out now!
The Ready Room.
The movie series would not have relaunched and become what it was if not for the amazing bounce of The Wrath of Khan. The Wrath of Khan was to Star Trek the same thing that The Best of Both Worlds was to Next Generation.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
It's also the end of a character and a thing that is really about how death is just a part of life. And that while there's an end, it doesn't mean that it's the end.
Literary Treks.
Well, I've always liked the... I like that episode for...
I mean, it's one of the most derided of the original series episodes, but yet I always, it has a place in my heart for some reason. I've always enjoyed watching it over. So I wanted to do something with those guys, the Gascalbians.
The 602 Club. Like, I could kind of dismiss Droids in Distress and Fight or Flight and everything like that, and I was just kind of watching the background, but all of a sudden I started catching myself, like, stopping working and just focusing on watching. And so it just got better and better and better. And I think I was hooked by episode 4, Breaking Ranks. That's when I was like, okay, I like this show. This is good. Warp 5.
In the history of Axanar, Alec Peters and Christian Gossett wrote a section of the history dealing with the Arcanus campaign. And in the Arcanus campaign, a majority of Starfleet ships were destroyed.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all of our shows. We are available pretty much on any platform where you can get your podcasts these days. And none of our, God, how many podcasts do we have? A gazillion?
I lost
at
track.
This point? It's a lot. But none of them are possible without the help of a sponsor. So let's hear a little bit about that.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
And I also want to thank PJC4774 for giving us 5 stars in the U.S. iTunes Store and writing an excellent review. And this is another person who's marathoned through all of our episodes in just about a month. So for that, I salute you to that journey. Wow, that's amazing. So thank you very much for doing that. And you know what I'm going to say now. If you haven't written an iTunes review, you know what to do. Just come on, do it already. Please, we love it. We're fast approaching 100 reviews in the U.S. iTunes Store.
And it really means a lot to us. When you guys write us a review, that is the highest compliment that you can give us. We love letters. We love voicemails. But the thing is, though, is that when you write a review, other people see it. And other people know that other people like it. And so if other people like it, then maybe I'll like it. And so as much as we like the personal touch of you guys talking to us on Twitter and email and everything like that, a review goes a long way. And so we thank you to those who have done it. And hopefully if you haven't done it yet, you'll consider doing it. It only takes 5 minutes.
Yeah, please do. Because really, that is the biggest mileage for us in terms of helping other people find the podcast. I mean, the iTunes rankings rely heavily on reviews, ratings, and all of that fun stuff. So if you do that, you're helping us out a great deal. One more thing before we go, please consider supporting our network through Patreon and becoming a patron to Trek FM. We would like to thank our associate producers, Kenneth Tripp, Lisa Stevens, and Jamie Deuce, who is new to TTJ as an associate producer. We want to thank all of them and all of you for supporting Trek FM via Patreon. Please consider, if you haven't already done so, going to patreon.com/trekfm. There's perks in it for you, and it helps us out greatly. So thanks again to everybody who's supported us in that fashion. Now, we've got this one done, but what's happening next week?
Next week is another addition to a series that we've been doing, and it's our top 5 moments of season 3.
But you're going to have to tune in next week to find out what our picks are. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!